Now the question arises, well, how did this sort of impression arise? How did it get about? Why did some people at least start thinking that Buddhism was a rather weak, rather feeble, rather negative, rather passive sort of teaching? Now this sort of impression seems to have arisen in quite a number of different ways, as a result of quite a number of different factors. First of all, it derives from some, at least, of the literature about Buddhism. Certainly, literature circulating in English. I think we don't always realize how old are the books, very often, on which we depend for our understanding of Buddhism. If you go along to any public library which has got books on Buddhism in it, 10 to 1, but you'll find that most of those books are quite old books. And even if you go along to bookshops which are selling new books, you very often find that what they are selling are in fact reprints of quite old books, books written some 50, 60 or even 70 years ago. In fact, both in India and in America, there are publishing firms which are specializing nowadays in simply reprinting old books without bringing them up to date or correcting misunderstandings or errors in any way. So we are still, as it were, saddled with quite a lot of literature on Buddhism which was originally produced some 50 or 60 years ago, at the very beginning of the study of Buddhism in the West. And these productions, these books about Buddhism, tend very often to see Buddhism, the Buddha's teaching, in terms of the religion then current, that is to say, in terms of Christianity. And they tend to see the Buddha himself very much in terms of Christ, as though the Buddha was a sort of oriental Christ. Now we may say that at that time, this was only natural, this was indeed inevitable. One has to go, when one is trying to broaden one's knowledge, broaden one's outlook, one has to go from the known to the unknown. One has to go little by little, step by step. So it was only natural at that time that people encountering Buddhism or trying to explain Buddhism should make use to some extent of Christian concepts and so on. And it was even natural, we may say, that they tried to understand the Buddha in the light of their understanding of Christ. But the difficulty, but the drawback was that the Christianity which was then current, 50 or 60 years ago, was often popular Victorian Christianity. Not just Christianity, but Victorian Christianity. And Christ was, of course, the Victorian Christ. And both of these tended to be, one may say, rather milk and water versions of the real thing. I remember it has been said that for the Victorians, for our grandfathers and great-grandfathers, Christ was a ghostly figure in a white sheet, gliding around Galilee and gently rebuking people for not believing in the Nicene Creed. This was the Victorian Christ. So one might say that in the same way, for this type of literature, the type of literature about which I am speaking, the Buddha also is a ghostly figure in a yellow sheet, gliding around India, gently rebuking people for not being kind to animals. Now, not that one shouldn't be kind to animals, of course, but being kind to animals is by no means the whole of Buddhism. So this is just one of the ways in which we tended to get the impression about Buddhism, about the Buddha, that they were rather weak, rather negative, rather, if you like, emasculated. And then again, some of us at least derive our impressions of Buddhism partly, perhaps even unconsciously, from an acquaintance with later Indian Buddhist art. Now, Indian Buddhist art has a long and a glorious history, but towards the end of that history, it does become a little degenerate, a little decadent. And it often depicts the Buddha as a rather dreamy, rather feminine, not to say effeminate figure. And one might say that modern Indian art does this even more so. If you go around India and you find or you look at popular representations of the Buddha, well, they're simply ghastly. He looks like a cheap third-rate film star. This is how he's depicted nowadays. So if one encounters this sort of picture of the Buddha, usually on calendars, or if you encounter images or little even plaster figures of the Buddha of this type, you will get the impression of something weak and feeble and, as I said, even effeminate. In this sort of so-called art, in this popular art, the figure of the Buddha becomes very sugary and very sentimental. The Buddha is usually represented not with a smile of enlightenment, but with a sort of simpering smile, almost a coquettish smile, which doesn't look like the real Buddha at all. So this sort of impression that we have, if we are in contact with this sort of art in any way, this impression that Buddhism is something feeble and weak is a little strengthened. Then again, historically at least, Buddhism is an Eastern religion in the sense that it originated in the East. It's a universal teaching, it isn't limited to the East, but it arose there, and historically speaking, it is an Eastern religion, an Eastern teaching. And in the West, even now, only too many people tend to think of the East generally as being rather slow and rather backward and rather unprogressive as compared with the West. So these sort of epithets tend to attach themselves to Buddhism too, when Buddhism is considered to be an Eastern or an Oriental teaching or religion. And then again, we have to recognize the fact that a very great deal of contemporary Buddhist teaching in the East is in fact rather negative. If you look at the Buddhist scriptures themselves, you'll find a very strong, a very powerful positive emphasis. There is a negative side too, which is complementary, but only too often in the East today, in the Buddhist countries of the East today, is the negative virtues which tends to be stressed. They tend to tell you that you are not to do this and not to do that and refrain from this and abstain from that. But what you should do, what you should cultivate, what you should develop, this is not stressed nearly as so often. And very often in the East, especially in expositions of Buddhism written for the Western world, in English and other Western languages, the teaching of the Buddha is presented very much in terms of avoidance, rather than in terms of engagement, in terms of escape, rather than in terms of commitment. If one picks up some of the little popular tracts on Buddhism, which come from Ceylon or from Burma, or from Thailand, one usually finds, I'm afraid, that it's this negative aspect of the teaching which is stressed, more than the positive aspect. So in these and in various other ways, we tend to get the impression, very often in the West, that Buddhism itself is rather weak, is rather negative, rather passive, and so on. And we tend to get the impression sometimes that in this way Buddhism is a religion for the old and feeble rather than for the young and vigorous. So this evening what I propose to do is to try to show, just for a few minutes, the other side of the coin. And that's why I'm speaking this evening on the heroic ideal in Buddhism.